KCSB FM Santa Barbara 91.9. KCSB News presents Inside Isla Vista, a weekly show covering an array of issues important to the Isla Vista community. The mission of the show is to educate, inform, and raise awareness about what's happening in Isla Vista. It does not endorse any political candidates or ballot initiatives. There's a different host each week. Let's meet tonight's host on Inside Isla Vista.
This is Dick Flax. I'm a different host, and I'm here with my friend and co-talker here. And we've been on this Isla Vista, Inside Isla Vista show periodically since we began. George Thurlow, who is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Alumni Affairs at UCSB, and more particularly or pertinently to this program, is the special advisor to Chancellor Yang on Isla Vista matters. George, welcome to you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And great to have you. This is our first chance since Election Day to talk about what happened vis-a-vis Isla Vista on Election Day. And my understanding is there was a possibly record-breaking turnout of people to vote in IV. And as people who are at all tuned in to Isla Vista Matters know, the big thing on that ballot for Isla Vista, first of all, was the formation of Community Service District, CSD, Measure E, and then Measure F to fund that district, as well as the election of persons to serve on the board of the district if that measure were approved. And so, something like 80% support for the Measure E?
Dick, 88% of the voters approved the district.
Returns.
Yeah, and I don't think I've seen 88% of California voters vote for anything. So to have 88% of the voters in IV approve this district, that's overwhelming.
Yeah, even motherhood would not get that.
No.
And a board was elected, correct?
Correct.
And so that board has taken office? Have they actually met?
The district becomes effective March 1st.
Oh, okay.
And the board will probably meet immediately after that, sometime in the early part of March.
So the board, tell us the composition of the board briefly.
Well, they have different terms in order for future elections to not elect the entire board at one election. Mm-hmm. They've got staggered terms. So I won't tell you which ones, but essentially the new board members are Ethan Bertrand, who's a City College graduate who's transferred to UCSB, very active in the campaign. Natalie Jordan, who is a officer in the Associated Students, very active in AS politics. Father John Stephen Hedges, who a lot of people know from his work in Isla Vista. Jay Freeman, who's a businessman and computer company owner, and Spencer Brandt, who's also a student.
And then there are ex officio members who are not elected but will sit, and with a vote, I presume.
That's correct. The chancellor of the University of California, Santa Barbara, will have an appointment, and there's no term limit on that appointment. And the county board of supervisors will have an appointment with no term limit, and they will be equal voting members.
And they may be people of weight.
I think that because of the nature of self-government in Isla Vista, I think that these representatives will end up serving longer terms, mm-hmm. and therefore end up carrying more institutional memory and also institutional politics.
So they represent the two major entities, institutional entities that.
That's correct.
Now
that
also,
but that may mean that they're lightning rods too.
Yeah, of course, it's a hot seat, but creatively so. So that's the sort of positive side of the story. The tax measure that would fund the operation of the district required a two-thirds vote of those voting, I presume.
Yeah. Correct.
And it got what?
It needed 66.6%, and it received 62.4%.
Yes, a shortfall, which means that this tax, which would have been a what percent utility tax?
8% utility user's tax on certain utilities.
And so each user of what? Electricity? And,
electricity, water.
And cable?
Not cable TV, and not... not telecommunications, uh-huh. But mostly it was water and electricity and gas.
So that didn't pass. So that would have, the district's budget, as understood from the outset, requires what neighborhood amount?
Well, that was going to raise about $500,000 a year. So that's a big hole to fill.
Right. And so that, you might think, off the cuff, is a real setback or crisis. But those like yourself who've been involved in this don't necessarily think it's a terribly pessimistic moment.
Well, I don't. I think, first of all, the fact that the measure passed by such a large margin means that you have broad community support. I think the district members of the board are going to go back to the voters in 2 years and run a better campaign. And at that point, they're going to have a record and they're going to have some ideas. This one was hard because it was essentially pass a tax for something that we don't know what it is. And the fact that it still got 62% is very positive.
There was some negative critique of the tax, too, wasn't there?
It wasn't strong, but the landlords did raise some money. Well, I think it was disappointing for many of us that the landlords chose at this point in time to run a campaign, and it wasn't a positive campaign. And it was only a small handful of landlords, and they did some things that were... I would just say is that they didn't build community by essentially running a highly negative campaign.
So the possibility that reaching out to some of those folk could work in bringing them on board in terms of community support and so forth.
Absolutely.
We can hope. But meantime, so the lack of that $500,000, how can the district deal with that?
So... early on in the negotiations over this CSD, and of course, as the listeners might recall, this district was created in the state legislature, which is a highly unusual move because normally it would have gone through the local agency formation commission, which has over the last 40 years effectively blocked any kind of effective self-government.
Say that word again, 40 years. It sounded like 4 years.
40 years, 40 yeah, years. 40 years. Yeah. So the legislation, during the negotiations for the legislation, the university asked that its properties be taken out of the district. New district, and there were precedent-setting reasons for that, which had to do with the whole system. The whole University of California system. And as part of that negotiation, the university pledged $200,000 a year for 7 years for mutually agreed upon projects that the community services district wanted to fund. So that will provide, if there is good faith negotiating on both parts, that'll provide some funding for some projects. I also want to say that a lot of us now are working on the idea of obtaining both private and public funding for student internships that would provide a core of student workers to fulfill these community service district obligations and tasks. And so that's moving forward. I know that our political science department here at UCSB is very interested in the possibility of this. And then finally, newly elected Supervisor Joan Hartman from the 3rd District has indicated that she may assign one of her staff people, who normally would be assigned to Isla Vista, to assisting the service district. So I think using some ingenuity and being frugal, I think this district can get off the ground and get moving and actually have a program that it could present to voters in 2 years indicating that 8% of your utility users' bill would be a great investment in the community.
Give us examples of projects that might fall under that university-funded piece.
Well, it's really early. I haven't had a chance to talk to all the board members. Of course, they're now under the Brown Act, so they can only meet with people individually, and there can't be serial meetings in which things are legislative actions are discussed serially. But I want to reach out to them and see what their ideas are. I think the university is very open. We want to improve the quality of life for the students in Isla Vista. And so if the CSD comes to the university with ideas about how to improve the quality of life, and in particularly improve public safety, I think the university is going to be very open to these kinds of funding. The idea of funding student internships is a great idea for that funding, because that's right up the alley of what our mission is.
You know, I was just thinking about that particular thing, and you as the alumni head might also give some thought. Can we identify, there are quite a few people who graduated from UCSB or were students here who worked in IV in that kind of role over years. And some of them may actually have gone on to earn money, you know. And so starting with that group right. of IV veterans, so to speak, might be a really
productive. Well, the one donor that I've already had conversations with is just that kind of person and who's very interested. You know, you take somebody like Jeff Green, who we all know, and his community involvement and his many years at the Fund for Santa Barbara.
Jeff is now head of the Santa Barbara City College Foundation, was head of the Fund for Santa Barbara, director of that, and was on the Ivy Park Board. He was a student body president, I think it was. Very active and remains a source of advice and stuff, I think, for people there.
I would anticipate Jeff will be helpful. Very active and helpful. And we haven't even talked about City College. And I think their new president is very interested in getting engaged in Isla Vista issues.
So what's exciting for someone like me who's been around for those 40 years of difficulty in getting self-government is the things you're saying that indicate a proactive role of people at UCSB, on the administration of the UCSB, to promote and enable the adequate support of this kind of self-governing body. And, of course, it's a great experiment that is really an experiment. It may not work to the degree that people think. But I assume even with the Measure F not passing, there's still a sense of energy and forward momentum.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you see that on all different fronts in Isla Vista, from the housing front to the cultural front to politics. And of course, that segues into the fact that the county, which really, at the end of the day, the county has the ultimate responsibility for Isla Vista. And I think we're going to see a Board of Supervisors with the election of Joan Hartman in the 3rd District and Doss Williams in the 1st District that's going to have just a higher level of interest. That's not to say that the former board didn't, but I think that this board will be even more engaged in Isla Vista. And it's interesting to note that two of Doss Williams' new staff members for his 1st District supervisor's seat are both veterans of Isla Vista organizing and are very involved. So that I think that's also a very, very positive as we go forward.
Well, here's a guy who, Doss, who grew up there and who for whom the district is in fact his baby in certain important ways. He's the one who shepherded this idea through the legislature, and so he has a stake in making it work. And then Joan Hartman, even though she doesn't live down here, she lives up in like Santa Ynez area, Buellton, but spent a lot of time, as I understand it, engaging and understanding the community. So yes, this is a fascinating situation where I joked to one of the leaders of the district effort, maybe because of the makeup of the board now, you don't even need the district anymore because you're going to have a more responsive board. But this is exciting. The whole thing can really work pretty well. You mentioned innovation or development in the housing area. What were you referring to?
Well, there's ongoing discussions with, I think there's a whole gamut of things going on in the housing area. And sometimes they occur not within the normal confines. So a very important development recently in Isla Vista was that one of the larger property managers was just hit with a $1.6 million judgment as a result of a roof collapse in 2013 mm-hmm. That injured a number of UCSB students. That's going to have a ripple effect across Isla Vista, both for county inspectors as well as for landlords and their insurance companies. So the university is working with a group of landlords right now to create language that will be included in leases as we move forward that prohibits certain types of dangerous activity like overcrowding balconies. This increasing, what we see more and more of is students up on roofs partying. And so there's a lot of work being done in terms of also holding landlords more responsible when events occur on their property that lead to health and safety issues. Mm-hmm. In other words, just there is a higher level of holding landlords accountable than there was 3 years ago.
So what happened with that police proposal for a noise strengthening or making more strict the noise ordinance?
Well, that's interesting because that is somewhere out there, mm-hmm. and it's essentially off everybody's radar. And I don't know if that's it was good. Essentially put off until the next board came in, but it is not front and center.
Yeah, now that we have the self-governing board, that's the body that. That's a perfect function for that board to consider. It should nothing, I just made this rule up, the Dick Flax rule, nothing that affects the daily life of people in Isla Vista should be adopted without the direct participation of the elected community service district.
Right? I think that's a great rule.
Yeah, it's a terrific rule.
So coming down the road, now as fresh from the CSD election, we have the Isla Vista Parks and Recreation District, which wants to put on the ballot in May a special measure that would assess a special tax on bedrooms and square footage of non-residential units. Now, what's happened is the Parks and Recreation District has had a parcel tax on the books for some period of time. That parcel tax expired. It was used to purchase parkland, and the Parks District feels that by putting something on the ballot now, essentially that would assess parcels the same amount as the old tax would be viable at this particular time, with the idea that that money would be used for a number of different activities, including probably the number one top priority is bringing recycled water, reclaimed water to the parks and trying to get them green again. There was some politics involved here because originally the Parks District wanted to put that measure on the same ballot as the CSD tax. Mm-hmm. And I think that the community will prevail. And actually, I think that this was a situation where they both would have gone down.
Right.
So it's going to be a mail-in ballot in May.
not in a regular election.
Not a regular election. It's going to be a special election. It requires two-thirds vote. It's going to cost the district about $60,000, but it would bring in, and I think the big controversy right now is, should it have a sunset? It would bring in about $250,000 a year. And the discussion in the community right now is, should it be open-ended or should it have a sunset? What do you think? Should it sunset?
You're asking me? After 10 years?
Sure.
I don't live there, so it should go on forever. You know, I don't want. But who pays that? That would be paid owner
by the property owners. Correct. Okay, so, but of course, they would pass that through. Anything that's assessed like that gets passed through to them.
Right. But if it sweetens it, if a sunset sweetens it for them and enables them to be silent and not resist it, then of course that's probably the right strategy. I don't actually. So what you said confused me. How does the Park District fund it, its staff and so forth, if this tax isn't there right now?
Well, the previous tax, it has bed taxes now and door taxes. And that's how it funds its budget right now. This was a special tax that was used for the acquisition of parkland.
I see.
And now it's going to be a special tax for the purpose of programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the top priority will be, and certainly one that will be used in the election, is to pay for reclaimed water to the parks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would make a dramatic difference in the parks and IV if they were irrigated.
I have a question that I'm curious about. Maybe no one else would be, but going back to the utility users tax, do members of fraternities and sororities, would they actually pay that tax as individuals? Do you know?
I don't know how that would be assessed. I believe it would be assessed per parcel. In other words, it would be assessed on the meter, and a fraternity would have a meter, a gas meter, a water meter.
So the fraternity would?
Yes.
But I thought the good thing politically about the utilities users tax is the property owner isn't liable for that tax. It's the individual user, right?
Well, it really depends upon how the utility bill is set up now.
Okay. I don't want to get too deep into that, but it seems relevant to understanding what the magnitude of the vote, given that it requires such a two-thirds vote, makes it very hard to pass, which was the purpose of the two-thirds vote and so forth. So I think there were some other things.
The other, I think, interesting on the horizon issues coming up is the reappearance of the Ocean Road project, which is a very, very important piece to the university's efforts to create a true college community in Isla Vista that doesn't feel so separate as it does now. So the Ocean Road project would be a mixed-use project along Ocean Road. And Ocean Road is the road that runs from the Student Health Center down the property line between the division between Isla Vista and the university. That road is Ocean Road, and it dead ends at the ocean.
Eucalyptus trees are a prominent feature of that.
Exactly. That's probably the best. The eucalyptus curtain, which has become a wall.
Right.
And I think the university and many of its leaders have long been decried the fact that the entrance to the campus from Isla Vista was so shabby. You go through a gopher hole called the Pardal Tunnel to get onto campus. And otherwise, it really does feel like there is no connection between this campus. So the Ocean Road project will create numerous openings into Isla Vista, and in fact open up some of the roads and redo the Pardal Tunnel into what would be a entrance to a world-class university.
So, it's about time we were world class.
Yeah.
So it's housing.
Yes.
For faculty and staff.
Right? Faculty and staff. Although I think there's a real push, and of course this is my personal bugaboo, which is I will be advocating that priority be given to first responders. And actually, I heard a very interesting mention today. The Chancellor's Coordinating Committee on Isla Vista met today and discussed a number of topics. And one of the things that was interesting was that there is some consideration being given to providing housing for county first responders. You know, Dick, from living in this community a long time and going through several natural disasters, fires, floods, earthquakes, we are cut off from the rest of the world if the Gaviota Tunnel collapses and or the Ventura River.
A major catastrophe would prevent the first responders who don't live here, and that may be a lot of them or most of them, from getting in. So,
exactly.
So that's the idea that you're expressing. I'm cutting you short because our time in radio terms is coming close. We have 3 minutes. And maybe we'll be together, if you still agree to do this, next year, 2017. Our next show will be, early January, I think. So maybe this Ocean Road project is something we could delve into a bit further in terms of what the controversies or consequences of it are. I'm very personally interested because housing in Ivy and the university's housing is a topic I'm really interested in. So thank you very much, George. You will be heard on this show again next week when a replay of an event that was held at the UCSB library about Isla Vista, a panel called Voices of a Community, Ivy Residents, with George Thurlow as moderator. Remember doing that?
Yes. There were some really smart people on that panel, and I didn't get in their way.
So that's going to be replayed here on Ivy Inside Isla Vista next Wednesday, 5 o'clock. Be sure to come back here for that. This is Dick Flex together with George Thurlow. My program, Culture of Protest, and on every week, 6 p.m. to 7 here at KCSB on Thursday evenings. We're always on www.kcsb.org for the world to listen in. Thank you for being here, folks, and see you again.